right. Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Triangle Sports Talk podcast, episode 3 for you today. I'm James Biernot alongside Paulie Lascalzo. We're going to be starting off talking all about Drexel sports and then bring it on into men's and women's basketball. Not to spoil it, but definitely some negative things from the men's basketball side. Women's basketball, they keep finding ways to win, even though they really can't score 60 points. But we'll get back into both of those. Let's start it off, Paulie, with our campus catch-up. And I want to start up with women's lacrosse. They lost their home opener to number 12 UPenn, 15-11 at Vitus Field. It was a competitive game, but definitely a tough one to lose. You want to beat Penn, win the battle of 33rd and Market. And then they're heading on the road to Harvard on Friday. So another tough Ivy League opponent. But Paulie, what can you tell me about that tough loss to UPenn?
Yeah, playing UPenn, even though it's at home, was always going to be a really tough matchup. A very challenging out-of-conference schedule for the Dragons. You mentioned taking on Harvard. Playing these teams is going to really help come CAA, practicing against these incredibly talented teams. And hey, if you get a few wins, you build your resume for a potential at-large bid, as we saw Drexel accomplish last year.
Yeah.
But in this game, you know, Drexel was able to hang tight through the first three quarters, but then just kind of lost it. 15-11 was the final. I think one positive there is, you say 11 goals against a good team. You feel pretty decent about that. You may have been a little bit worried about the offense after the first game of the season, where offense was a little bit of a struggle against UConn. But, you had B. Buckley with a really strong game, 5 points. Anna Maria Gragnani continuing her awesome start to the season with another 4 goals on Saturday. So, you know, you feel good about some of the offensive output you got there. But defensively, you need to shore up a little bit. Talk about Jenica Cuoco as our goalie. You got to feel really confident that you always will have the best goalie going into a game, but maybe a little bit more support for her out in front, and just all around defensively need to lift up the play.
Yeah. Well, they almost matched Penn in shots 24-26. So they were getting the opportunities on offense against one of the top 15 teams in the country. So that's always a good sign. And they had 16 goals against Wagner, but that's much easier competition than UConn or UPenn. So good to see them get a big offensive production like that. You mentioned 4 goals from Gragnani, 4 from Allison Drake, and then 1 goal from B. Buckley, along with a career-high 4 assists for her. So that was a great game for the sophomore. But Jenica Cuoco in goal, 6 saves to 15 goals allowed. Definitely not as great a game as she's accustomed to. But I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's got to be a balanced end, defensive, offensive. So they got to give her some support there. And then taking it over to the men's lacrosse side of things, they had their home opener on Saturday against UMBC. They lost 6-9. They're facing off against Lafayette today as we're recording, so we're not able to talk about that score. But it was a tough one for them. They got 2 goals from Whit Crawford, 1 from Gavin Kelly, who was All-CAA first team last year, 2 assists for Owen Knight in his Drexel debut. But Paulie, all in all, it was definitely not the way the men's team wanted to open their season.
Yeah, not a great way to start out the season. And, you know, it seemed kind of like a second quarter disaster for the Dragons here. You give up 5 goals in the second quarter, 4 goals in 2 minutes. That's not what you want. I'm sure that's, you know, not an ideal game plan and not what you want to see moving forward, something that the Dragons are going to have to clean up. But, you know, there's some positives in there. You had Max Semple becoming the 39th player in Drexel history to reach 100 career points. So you love to see that. I love to see some guys, you know, building their legacy here at Drexel. But all around, you know, head to Lafayette, turn the page, try and get a win there. And as the season goes on, you've got to keep stacking. 6 goals as well, probably not a sustainable way of winning. Going to need to find a way to score some more goals, get some more offense in there.
And I mean, overall, Drew McGill had a good game in goal, 7 saves to 9 goals allowed. Definitely not a bad game for him at all. You mentioned Semple's milestone. Congratulations to him. But, yeah, they'll take on Lafayette today, so we won't be able to talk about that. And then they will head on the road to the the University of Albany in New York on Saturday. Another tough team. So they are definitely, just like the women's team, opening their season with a really tough out-of-conference schedule. So that takes us into the wrestling side of things. A lot of positives here. The men's wrestling team defeated Long Island University 36-6 before defeating Hofstra 36-0 to complete the sweep and win the EIWA Independence Division Championship. They'll take on number 19 Maryland on Friday at the DAC. But those were two really big wins. They're the number 44 overall team in the nation. So some good momentum for our wrestling team as their season concludes.
Yeah, happy to see it. You know, early on in the season, there was a little bit of some stumbling blocks, but they really seem to have found their form. And to, you know, walk away with some hardware at the end of the season, got to feel awesome about that. And, you know, taking out a really good team in Maryland on February 21st. But, hey. Yeah. You already won a championship. Keep it rolling.
Yeah, and they do have two wins this year against top 25 ranked squads, so that's always a good sign. You're facing them at the DAC. They held Princeton to a very competitive match at the DAC earlier in January, so that's always a good sign for a team trying to defeat a top 25 opponent. But I want to shout out four of our wrestlers, Desmond Pleasant, Jordan Soriano, Giuseppe Hoos, and Mickey O'Malley, who are all top 31 in their respective weight classes. So a big part of this team having a lot of success. And I think two other wrestlers are top 35 on different publications. So a very well-rounded unit.
Love to see it. Yeah. Go Dragons.
Go Dragons. With that, let's wrap up the campus catch-up with both men's and women's squash. Had some tough results against Trinity. They'll be taking on the Ivies, UPenn on Thursday, and then Columbia on Saturday, both at the Klein Center. Paulie, anything to report from the squash side?
Yeah, I mean, Trinity's a really good team. You may probably not know much about Trinity College, but I believe that on the men's side, they're preseason ranked in the top five, and on the women's side, I believe they're around seven. So, you know, I think Drexel ranked about 10th in both men's and women's. So kind of down year for preseason rankings for Drexel. We were in the top five for a few years running. But yeah, Trinity's a really good team. Kind of got, you know, beat handedly by them.
Yeah.
But like playing some more stout competition against the Ivies coming up. And you got a chance to, if you can get a win there, really, you know, make some ground and move yourself up in the rankings. But again, really tough competition. So, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. And with that, let's head over to our basketball reports as we do every week. Starting it off with men's basketball, last Thursday they faced off against the Hampton Pirates, falling eventually in that game 58-63. The first thing of note definitely in this game was the three-point shooting. It was abysmal to say the least. 4 for 21, whopping 19% went in, and the team was out-rebounded 38-30 against a Hampton team that we definitely could have sized up with physically. I think if Victor Painov and William Garcia Edson were used for more usage and a little better under the paint, like we talked about last week, we really didn't see that. Much more limited role for Bill. I think only 16 or 17 minutes for Vic as well. I don't think he played a ton in this game. So those guys combined for 25 minutes after they were both averaging over 20 minutes per game in the few games before then. So a really, really strange game plan by Spiker. We've been talking about how he goes about these rotations, how he fits guys into different roles, and it really doesn't seem like there's any sort of consistency. We've been a little bit, like, dumbfounded by some of the decisions, but it was even more apparent against Hampton and William & Mary, which we'll get to in a second. But 8 minutes for Bill after 29 in the two games before that, yet Horace Simmons gets 9 minutes in the second half. Kavon gets 16 minutes despite playing 3 minutes in games prior, and then Deuce, who had just played 30 minutes in back-to-back games and been the Big Five player of the week, our first Big Five player of the week since Amari Williams, he gets 18 minutes, including six in the second half. Paulie, can you make it make sense?
I can't. I wish I could for you, James. We were watching this game together, actually. We were in the Triangle's office watching this game as we worked, and we just kept looking at each other saying, what is going on? What are we missing here? There's just a lot of weird things going on with this team, with this rotation. Horace Simmons. I like him as a player. I think he's a very talented guy. He has shown from time to time that he could be a lethal three-point shooter. He brings size. He might not be the best defender, but athletically he's gifted, and he certainly has a skill set. No, in any event, he has not been used all season long. Against Hampton, this is a game we needed to win. It's a game we should have won. Hampton is one of the bottom-feeding teams in the CAA. And in a game where we are struggling to pull away from Hampton, we are unable to build a lead. We're in a dogfight with a really not good team.
No.
You turn to a redshirt freshman who has barely played all season long to help get you out of it.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like a very good spot. You mentioned Kevon Vanderhorst. Again, 2 for 5, whatever. He gets 4 points in 16 minutes. Not great, but like, what are you going to do? Deuce Drake has been a great player for the last few games for us. For a few weeks now, he's been scoring 20 points at will. Again, he's a volume scorer. If he wants to put up shots, if the ball's in his hands, it's probably going up. That's the kind of player he is. Doesn't matter. Lately, the ball's been going in. He's a talented player, and he's really figured it out. Jack Spiker has started him every single game this season and has shown that he does not necessarily trust Kevon Vanderhorst in big moments. So tell me why down the stretch in the second half, in some of the most important minutes, it was Kevon Vanderhorst. Again, I like to see him play. I think he's talented. But, A, they're not really running an offense that Kevon can thrive in. They're refusing to push the pace. They're not attacking the rim. And they're kind of forcing him into an off-ball spot where he's taking more threes than he really should. So in any event, I don't think they're really making an offense design around him. But B, Deuce Drake has been a great player in this game. 4 for 9 from the field, 1 for 3 from three-point land. Play him. He deserves to play down the stretch. He is a great offensive scorer for this team right now, and especially in a game where Kobe McGee only takes 6 shots for some reason.
That's what it is.
In a game where, you know, everyone else is kind of struggling to find any sort of real traction. No one's really, you know, feeling confident. Yame Butler puts up 13 shots because that's what he does. But, you know, no one is really being confident, taking the ball, putting it up. Why is Deuce Drake not in? That is the perfect spot for him to be in.
Absolutely. And here's the thing that you just mentioned. It baffles me the most. If you're going to have Kobe McGee in the game for 38 minutes, which he's played 38 minutes the last two games and played 47 minutes the game prior to that because it went to OT, and he's going to average less than 8 shots per game, that's just not going to work. Kobe needs to take more shots. Kobe took 6 shots in that game in his 38 minutes. In the second half, Kobe wasn't doing anything when he's out there. Kobe's not, if he's not going to be taking shots, he's not adding a ton. And when you're struggling in the second half on the road and you need an offensive spark, it doesn't seem like Kobe's going to be that guy in that moment, especially based on how he had played in all 30 whatever minutes until that point. And with the Kevon point, like, how are you going to expect a guy who showed really great flashes to excel in a larger role when right when you gave him his first larger role, you immediately cut his minutes? So it just really, there's a lot of things that confuse me about what's been going on recently. Deuce playing 6 minutes in the second half is something I will not be able to wrap my head around of that game.
And it's not unique to this game. It is becoming a trend that for whatever reason, he's going to start every game. And he's earned that at this point.
He shot 3 for 7 in the first half from the field.
He has earned it.
Yeah.
But down the stretch, it's Zach Spiker's most trusted point guard is Shane Blakeney. So either you should do 2 things, Zach Spiker. Either Shane Blakeney should start because clearly you trust him the most. Or B, Deuce Drake should play over Shane Blakeney down the stretch. Or you got to figure out a way to have them both on the court at the same time. It does not make sense to have just this weird point guard rotation where Deuce starts and it doesn't matter how well he plays because he's not trusted in the clutch moments to step up.
But he has been in the past. That's the thing, is he was sending them to OT and double OT with those clutch moments, and he's putting up 25 points and 21 points. He's such a talented guy and a guy that can hit the clutch shot. Kobe won't take the clutch shot. Shane, although he's been playing better recently, I don't trust as much to take the clutch shot. Mm-hmm. Why is Deuce not in the game? It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And so, like, that's really an issue, especially with the three-point shooting, too. Mm-hmm. Deuce is a guy that, when he's getting hot and when he's putting up a lot of shots, will then consequentially put up more threes. We can take 21 threes, but we're only hitting four. Like, that's ridiculous. That's embarrassing. And so later in the game, when you're really struggling to get the three-point ball going in a close game, bring out one of the guys that can – maybe he's not your best percentage shooter, but he can hit a three-ball when you need him to.
Yeah, and this is, I think, where the Drexel team is a little bit caught in between all over the place and yeah. where Zach Spiker's not helping them out. A, this team came into the season saying, we're going to be a three-point shooting team. They did not start off hot shooting the three, so they've abandoned it more or less in games like this – where you're shooting 4 for 21, 19%, awful. They abandon it so wholly as a yeah. team. But listen, if you're Deuce Drake, if you're Kobe McGee, 3 3-point attempts for an entire game is malpractice. Yeah. Kobe McGee, you're the best 3-point shooter in the conference. You're one of the best 3-point shooters in the nation. I don't care if you miss your first 3-pointers, 3 3-pointers. You need to take more yeah. down the stretch. Be assertive. If you catch the ball and you're open, I do not care. Put that ball up. You have earned that right, and you owe that to the team, really, yeah. to do it.
Absolutely.
So that drives me crazy. And like you said, Deuce Drake has been probably our second best 3-point shooter, and you bench him, and you don't yeah. let him play. One positive from this game I will say, though, is it is another strong game from Shane Blakeney. Yeah. I don't want to construe my previous comments as saying Shane – doesn't deserve to play down the stretch. Throughout the season, he's been awful at yeah. points. And but lately, in the month of February, he has turned a corner.
Absolutely.
He's making his threes at a much higher clip. He's proven to be a little bit more selective with his shots, taking good shots, being a lot more aggressive down low, picking his moments. So I've really liked what I've seen from Shane. And in this game, 11 points. But again, you're 1 for 2 from three. Shane, take another 3-pointer.
Yeah.
Like, all season long, we've been begging you, don't take threes when you're 0 for 5. Stop taking another shot when all you have done is miss today. Well, guess what? Shane, you're hot today. Keep it rolling.
Yeah.
This is where it just feels like we're, to use a phrase, I guess, we're half pregnant everywhere.
Yeah.
We are, don't know if we want to attack the rim.
Mm-hmm.
But we're a little bit afraid of shooting free throws, so we don't really like to attack the rim, and we're scared.
We shot 5 free throws.
Exactly.
We made 2 free throws.
Hey, there's a lot to be frustrated about, and I think that Zach Spiker needs to tell his team, listen, we play up to our competition in every game. We play down to our competition in almost every single game. This has got to stop. Who are you as a team? You have to figure out your identity, because game by game, we change who we are. We get afraid to be who the best version of ourselves is. Like, Zach Spiker, our best point guard is Deuce Drake.
Yeah.
Play Deuce Drake more than 18 minutes, more than 6 minutes in the second half. Cole Hargrove, you are a very good player. You showed it in the beginning.
Yeah.
Don't take 6 shots for a whole game.
Yeah.
Kobe McGee, you're a great player.
Don't
take six shots for an entire game. You got to just be confident and not on a game-to-game basis wilt between are we going to rise to the occasion today, or are we just going to let Hampton, one of the worst teams in the CAA, really take it to us?
Yeah.
That's embarrassing.
It is. And I think a little bit of we talk a lot of things about what Spiker does wrong, but a little bit of maybe kind of talking about that makes him look a little better is this whole season, and maybe it's his fault, maybe it's just the youngness and inexperience of the team in general, there hasn't been a guy who's been able to put up similar stat lines game to game and similar production game to game, or even like take the same number of shots game to game. There's not a single guy really on the team that's been able to do that, because Kobe will take 16 shots and have 22 points, and then the next game he takes 6 shots and has 8 points. And it's like, what happened there? How can you game plan for that a little bit? And then maybe in those games where he does have 6 shots, Deuce has 25 points, but then you're going to cut Deuce's minutes. So it's like, I want to see Spiker's side of, like, this team does not have a lot of consistency. They're very much, like, kind of back-assward. Like, they're just all over the place. They don't really know what they're doing. And it hurts to watch because I think there's talent here to win most of the games that we have played. We've been losing a lot of winnable games. I'd argue that almost every single game in conference play has been a winnable game. Because like you said, I really like the way you said it. We play up to the better teams, we play down to the worst teams. And that's been the truth. Against like Monmouth, right? Not an incredibly good team. We had to take it to two overtimes and then we still lost. It's like very much that, but then the same thing with Towson, best team in the conference. We took them to two overtimes and lost. Same outcome, very different teams. And I think it's just because we, like you're absolutely right, we don't know what we have. And well, we should know what we have because we've seen enough of these guys and what they do well. It's just like, we don't know what to do with what we have.
Yeah, I think one thing, Drexel is an inexperienced team as far as no player besides Yame Butler is in a role that they have ever been in at the Division I level. Even Dustray, JUCO point guard. Shane Blakeney barely played last year. Cody McGee was like a 3-and-D guy who played sparingly, never was a number one option on offense in his college. So like this is a kind of a new role for everyone. But listen, we are in mid-February. The CAA tournament is coming soon. So if you haven't learned your role yet, that worries me. We need to, for everyone, to figure it out soon. And listen, like, I love Kobe McGee. Kobe McGee is as good of a person to root for as there is. But, like, he has a great opportunity to make his mark on Drexel basketball as the number one option on a team that has so much potential. Yeah. And I just, like, it's frustrating when you say some games it's there for him to take it and he doesn't. And that rang true again in the William & Mary game the very next 2 days later.
Yeah. So let's talk about that William & Mary game, moving on a little bit. It was a 72-59 loss, but you wouldn't have expected that if you watched only the first half because the Dragons were up 5, 43-38 at half. How do you get outscored 34-16? That is like everything out of the Hampton game. I don't think anything embarrasses me more than that. To be have more than your total points doubled in the second half by your opponent, a team that you beat by 20 points less than a week before then, or a week and change before then, it just doesn't make sense. Another game where the three-point shooting was not going incredibly well, you still take 24 three-pointers. You shoot 29%. You get out-rebounded again. More guys put up more points in this game. No single player had over 5 rebounds. There's so many glaring problems. And then you look at just the change in what happened first to second half, because this is very glaring. Kobe 3-for-4 from the field. Deuce 3-for-4. Yame 4-for-7. Shane 4-for-4. The team shot 60% from the field in the first half and almost 50% from 3. Second half, Kobe 0-for-4. Yame 2-for-7. Shane 1-for-4. Deuce 2-for-6. I just don't get it. It just seems like we shot 35% worse in the second half from the field, and we did not hit a single three-pointer. We shot 0-for-9 from 3 in the second half. It was just like very much two completely different games, it felt like. And you can't do that. Like, because very much this team is doing everything they can to make it look like they're going to be a one-and-done in the CAA tournament. Like, this game very much told me that.
This game was disheartening, to be sure. Yeah. I mean, William & Mary, again, a team you beat by 20, and it was William & Mary was going to be motivated to, you know, play Drexel at Kaplan at home, you know, take and make a statement probably. Yeah. But in the first half, we took it to William & Mary in a big way. At, like, 43 points, you know, it's not like an uncommon thing in most college basketball. For Drexel basketball, being on pace for 86 points is like, oh my God, you're shooting the lights out.
And that's what we scored against them the first time.
So you felt like, oh my goodness, maybe we just had William & Mary's numbers, how you felt. Then the second half comes, even until about halfway through the second half, Drexel was maintaining around a 5-point lead. They were able to kind of, you know, hold on.
Yeah.
And then it was just that last about 10 minutes where William & Mary caught fire a little bit from three and Drexel kind of self-detonated.
Yeah.
Again, to my point, I don't think we have an identity all the time that we can go to. I would like to say, you know, looking at us, we should be able to score no matter what. You have a guy like Yame Butler who is as talented of a one-on-one player as there is in the league. he can't make free throws. Yeah. He gets to the basket, he cannot make his free throws. So that kind of, you know, takes away one of what should be your strengths. And then again, 0 for 9 from 3, you'd like that's when you say you have guys who should be able to be one-on-one scorers. Go get to the hoop, go, yeah. You know, Cole Hargrove, go be assertive down low. William Mary does not have a lot of height in their lineup right now. Go to work, Cole.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen. So Vic Panoff, all of that is just like, what are we if and who can you be when shots are not falling for you? And that's tough.
13 minutes for Vic. Like, what is going on there? And then 16 minutes for Ville. That's another game where their combined minutes don't equal what Ville was averaging solely by himself the two games prior. And it's like, those guys were doing such a great job against UNCW and against William and Mary at sizing up, playing under the hoop, and then being able to play like, you know, I can contribute as a guard, I can contribute as a forward, and when Cole's not on the court, we can handle things and then cut the minutes.
Vic took one shot. That's in 13 minutes, and that's where it's like Victor Panoff should not be number one option ever on his team. But Victor Panoff has a very certain skill set. He is a really, for a 6'7", 6'8 guy, he is a really good post player. There's no reason that when you are struggling to get any points on the board in the second half, you score 16 in the whole half, things aren't going well. At no point could have Coach Spiker said, all right, Vic, go post up.
Yeah.
Like, go try and get us an easy point down low. Yeah. That, where is that? That's where, like, little things that I feel like Drexel should have as an outlet to, you know, make things easier for themselves, they just choose not to do, and they've regressed to the most ugly, boring brand of basketball that's ever existed of just taking entire shot clocks, hoping that, you know, enough perimeter movement and dribble handoffs are going to somehow lead to open shots. And it doesn't work. No. It has not worked ever.
Yeah.
And something's got to change. And I put that on coaching, but I also put that on execution. The players have got to be a little bit, you know, more aggressive.
Yeah.
Shane Blakeney, you're 3 for, or Kobe McGee, excuse me, 3 for 5 from 3-point. You mentioned in the second half, not as strong, but still, if you're shooting 60% from 3 from a game, I need you to take
more. It was 3 for 3 in the first half. He missed 2 shots to start off the second half, and then it's the confidence is lost, or I don't know what it is. But to your point, Victor Panoff, you know, I would have loved to have seen Coach Spiker throw him 6 minutes and not a shot attempted in the second half.
Yeah.
And additionally, it's like one of those situations where, and you're absolutely right, and you've said this in past episodes, Drexel gets themselves in a spot where, oh, shoot, we're losing our lead. Our opponent's catching up. Let's maintain.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're facing a team that's as good as William and Mary, we were able to beat them by 20 points. They're still a good team. They got hot. We couldn't maintain. And then it's like all focus goes to the defensive side of things. We didn't score a point in the last over 3 minutes of that game. We were down 4 with 3:17 to go. And then got outscored 8-0 in the final 3 minutes, didn't even get a shot up, or like didn't get a shot at. It's ridiculous. It's just pathetic. It's like the method to success has presented itself at this point. We know how we can win games. We saw William and Mary the first time. We saw the Delaware game. Those were two teams that we beat handedly. The second time around playing William and Mary, we really struggled. We didn't have any of the same game plan in the second half, especially. Now we're playing Delaware again on the road. Makes me worry. It's like, I don't know. There's never a game you can go into feeling like, I think we can win this game, just because you never know what the product's going to be on the court.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. The Zach Spiker specialty at times has been playing to not lose rather than playing to win, and that has never worked once for these teams. You can try and shorten the game by taking up full possessions, making a really fast team like William Mary play a little slower. Great. I don't care. You still need to win the game. You can do everything to stop William Mary. You still need to score the ball. In a vacuum, holding William Mary to 34 points and a half is good. That is holding them below what they average in a half.
Yeah.
That was successful on defense. But when you do that at the expense of all of your offense, because you're focused on, all right, we have a 30-second shot clock and we're using 28 seconds of it. That is not how you win basketball games. It has never worked.
It hasn't worked, and it's not going to. And we'll hit the road ahead, but they'll play Delaware on Thursday at 6:30 on the road. 5 straight wins heading into this one against Delaware. You mentioned to me already the season or the series all time is tied. So very exciting game to close out Delaware's time in the CAA. They are also 5-9 in the CAA. They're 1-7 their last 8 games, tied with Drexel for 10th in the conference. So this is as much needed a win as there's been recently, maybe. We keep saying this, like, you have to win this game, you have to win this game. This one would be a true embarrassment if they were to lose, I think, just based on how poor Delaware's played this year. And usually they're a team that does really well at home. That hasn't been the case this year. So I don't think that excuse is there. And then they'll take on Charleston at Saturday at 12 at the DAC. That one will be on CBS Sports. Charleston 10-4 in the conference behind UNCW and Towson. They've lost to UNCW twice and then also lost to William and Mary and Monmouth. So 2 games I think we can definitely win. I don't know if we will. But, Paulie, do you want to hit any last points for men's basketball before we hop over to the women's side?
Yeah, 38-38 in your all-time series against Delaware. Delaware is heading to Conference USA in pursuit of I don't even know what. If you send them on their way with a loss, that would make me so happy. Yeah. That is incredible. And listen, I will say one thing about Zach Spiker. There are some games where he comes out with just a game plan that you couldn't even believe. And you're like, oh my goodness, he coached this one up. I felt that way about the homecoming game. You know, there are some games where he just comes out with an impressive game plan. I'm hopeful that he can do that again in this game. Send, you know, win that all-time series against Delaware. That will be beautiful. But yeah, the end of a rivalry, that makes me a little sad to know that there won't be any more, you know, homecoming games against Delaware. But how sweet it would be to end this rivalry on a positive note.
And end it 39-38 all time. I would love to see that. But you're absolutely right. I feel like against Delaware and against teams that Spiker has a little bit of connection to, I feel like we see a little bit more energy and a little bit more dedication with those games. And I mean, 32-22 in the second half of that game against Delaware earlier this year, that's really great, holding Delaware to 22 points in the second half. But also last year's game was just another one where they dominated down the stretch as well. So
and then Charleston, a team who was, you know, as a program, is the cream of the crop in the CAA. They've had 4 losses this season. You know, lost to William Mary, who we've shown we can beat. I think losses to UNCW and Monmouth. Charleston is a beautiful team at home, and hopefully in front of a really rowdy, packed DAC. Hopefully you can repeat some of the magic we had 2 years ago when we beat Charleston in our place. But, again, this goes without saying. Yeah. We've been saying it. Drexel can either finish 6th or 11th. That is the room for them to fall in the rest of the season. You'd like to finish closer to 6th. You have to win out, pretty much. Beat Delaware, get the vibes high, and then you've shown you can hang with anyone. You've shown you can beat anyone. Yeah. You essentially beat Towson twice. Yeah. You beat the best team in the conference twice. Beat Charleston, for the love of God. You cannot keep losing close games in heartbreaking fashion.
Yeah.
It will kill me.
Yeah. If I see a 3-point loss to Charleston, I'm turning off the TV. But let's take it over to the women's side of things. A really nice – well, I won't say really nice, but a nice way to end their victory over William and Mary. Maybe not the best overall game together. But talking about that one, just another good win. They were playing at home against one of their toughest division rivals. They looked like they were struggling a little bit in the first half. They only had, I think, 1 3-pointer, which was a Kara McCormick 3-pointer, and only had 24 points. And I mentioned on air, I was doing the halftime show, the Dragons were 9-1 in games where they had scored 58 or more points, Paulie. The only game the women's team lost where they scored more than 58 points was to Penn State, who they lost to in overtime on the road and only lost 2 by 8 points. So that's not a game. That's a complete outlier. They scored 59. They won by one, so the streak continues. But it's really not a hard margin to get to. And when you look at the box score, it's a little infuriating because the people who are out there taking shots for the Dragons, the seven players who played in this game or whatever, there's a lot of talented people on offense, and still it's only 59 points. I'll give big kudos to Kara McCormick. She had her season high of 20 points on 6 for 12 from the field. Chloe knocked down three free throws in the last half second off a very confusing foul. I do not know what was going on there to give the Dragons the win. But those were the big notes. Chloe also 9-9-8, almost a triple-double, which is the second time this year she's had a game that's worthy of a performance like that. So she's truly a big part of this team. But, Paulie, what did you see, especially in the second half?
Yeah, I think you look at the box score and you see some numbers and make you say, like, yeesh, like, yeah. You see Grace O'Neal 1-for-5, 0-for-4 from three. You see just, you know, 23% from three.
Yeah.
Lane McGurk 1-for-7 from the floor. Ooh. Like, you just, a lot of things that make you go, ooh. But this is a team under Amy Mallon who is going to drag every single opponent into a rock fight. And it does, like, it does not matter who they're playing. It's going to be tough for you against Amy Mallon coach team. And this is the epitome of that. Down late in late game situations. And I talked to Amy Mallon right before this game, actually. And she was mentioning how what she's really been impressed with her team is late game management of situations.
Yeah.
Drexel was down. I forget exactly what it was, but they were down late in the game. And, you know, in a situation where it's a foul fest where you're fouling the other team, hoping they miss their free throws, and then you're going down the other end having to execute and make your free throws, that was how Drexel won this game. Obviously, the last play being Chloe Hodges getting fouled on a, what would have been a buzzer beater heave of a three.
Yeah.
William Mary commits kind of a really bad foul,
yeah.
Like a foul that I'm sure William Mary's coach is keeping her up right now.
Yeah.
You know, and Chloe Hodges goes to the line, makes all three of her free throws. Drexel wins the game by one. So in a game like that, you're just saying, hey, we did all we could at the end of the game, and we won it. And hey, that's all you can ask for. But other positives, again, Cara McCormick scoring 20 points. Love to see that. We might have to throw our stats and research department on when's the last time Amaris Baker wasn't the Drexel leading scorer.
It's actually back-to-back games now.
Oh, is it?
She only had 7
points yes.
in their game before then. So that's, I will say, although both those games were not the best wins of all time, another fact for the Dragons, they, in their last, I believe it is 8 games, were 6-2, 6 wins when more than one Dragon scored double digits, and 2 losses when it was only Amaris. Another game where you had 2 in double digits with 2 more right behind them and 9 points, you get the win.
Yeah.
It's a recipe for success with this team. You need to have 2 people scoring double digits. You need to get 58 points. Should not be that hard to do for Amy Mallon. And as we're looking at the road ahead, they're playing Campbell, who recently just took down NCA&T. So a tough team who is in tied for third right now at 8-4. So definitely want to win that game, even though it's on the road. Also, you know, them beating NCA&T shows that it's possible to finish first in the conference, maybe. And then after that game against Campbell on Friday, they will face off against Elon, who they beat by 27 points at home, facing them on the road, a really tough team and a very physical team, too. So that'll be, I think, 2 good games for the women's team, but they've proven they can beat anyone this year. So I think that should be good.
Yeah, Campbell, really big game, tough on the road. That's a far road trip down Bowie's Creek. But yeah, they're right behind us in third place. And as we've been saying, you know, the CAA is wide open. If Drexel loses a game, they can fall from second all the way down to fifth if they lose 2 games in a row and other teams get hot. Like, you gotta stay winning. So, you know, gotta give your best shot against Campbell and Elon. And yeah, as you said, Amy Ballin can
yeah.
coach this team up to it.
Absolutely.
She's shown that she's winning close games. The toughest opponents they've faced besides NCAT, they've handled
yeah.
pretty well. So feel really good about this. And the team's kind of finding its form. If Maris yeah. Baker gets back to her scoring ways, this is very winnable.
Yeah.
And you can really ice second place in the conference.
Yeah. And I remember that last game against Elon, Chloe did not miss a shot. Kara had double digits. Amarius had 20 points. So it was
you were on the call for that game, right? So you,
yeah, that was a fun one to call because they held Elon at 8% from the field in the first half and then 18% for the game or something ridiculous like that. Go into Elon, do it again. Like, that's yeah. what I'd love to see from this team. They haven't had a big dominant victory since that game, really. It's all been these 3-point wins, 5-point wins, 1-point win, games where it's going down to the last 3 seconds. You don't want to get in the habit of that. So I think even though they're going on the road with how this team wins games, I think it offers them an opportunity to win 2 really tough games and keep that momentum going. Mm-hmm. But with that, I think that's all we have for you here in episode 3 of the Triangle Sports Talk podcast. Thank you for tuning in. And Paulie, I'm hoping we have much more positive things to say about the men's team and maybe some more scoring from the women's team. That's what I can ask for.
Yeah, hopefully we don't have as many reasons to get our blood pressure up as we record this next podcast. But yeah, this is a big week ahead. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
Spring sports kicking off and winter sports coming into, you know, conference tournament season.
Yeah.
So very exciting.
Absolutely.